This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Our next guest is Peter Curdy. Now, Peter Curdy is a research fellow at the Centre for Independent Studies. His expertise is in religion and values in civil society, law and religious freedom and ethics. Good morning, Peter. How are you today?
Good morning, Macca and Chas. I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for inviting me on to Saturday Magazine.
And thank you for coming on, actually. It's great to have such a reasoned a voice on a very topical issue this morning.
Not that you may not get the same level of reason on Q&A on Monday night, so I hope you steeled yourself for that.
We'll see how it goes.
Especially with some of the rabble that's lined up.
Oh, don't be unkind, Tess. That's one of the strengths of democracy. One of the questions, Peter, that I wanted to start off with, and some people might think this is controversial, I don't, but the difference between Islam and Islamic terrorism. What is the difference? As a belief and as an act, yeah.
That's a very good question. I think one of the key topics that we need to be talking about today is whether there is a difference between them. Clearly, not all Muslims, not all followers of Islam engage in acts of violence, but some do. And when they do, I think it's reasonable to say that that is an act of Islamic terrorism. It doesn't mean that, as I say, that all Muslims are terrorists. In fact, the vast, vast majority are not. They just want to go about living their lives and raising their kids and enjoying life as we all do. But some are driven by their belief in God to kill in the name of God, to perpetrate acts of violence in the name of God. And I think that when people do that and claim overtly to be doing it in the name of Islam, we are justified in saying that that is an act of Islamic terrorism.
Do we have, some commentators have said we have, we're not really addressing the issue, and particularly a lot of commentators on the right are saying we're not addressing the issue substantially enough or in a way that they would like in terms of curbing Islamic terrorism. And I wonder, when we look back through history, that religious extremism and religious terrorism, perhaps the Crusades, are an example that this is an issue that has been part of all cultures for so long. So how do we actually separate the two? Because when I look at it and I say, okay, I'm a believer in Islam, the Quran, and I'm a terrorist, so therefore I'm going to claim that what I'm doing it because I believe in the words in the Quran or the religion. We need to separate them. How do we do that? Because particularly for Muslims in all communities, as you say, the overwhelming majority do not support these acts of terror, yet they get tarred with the brush and they become the results of actions by governments and groups. So how do we get the message across to people, Peter, that there is a difference?
You make a very important point right at the beginning there, in the beginning of that question, because all religions have strains of violence in them. All, certainly Christians, have perpetrated acts of violence, and in fact still do. We think of people who kill anyone associated, or they kill doctors or people associated with abortion providers and clinics in the United States, and they do that explicitly in the name of their religious faith. And people are on record before they went to their deaths, before they were executed, saying that they were glad that they did it in the name of God, and they would do it again. So it's not just Islam, and that's a very, very important point. Why I think we're talking about Islam at the moment is it's presenting itself in a particular way in Western societies like Australia, like the United Kingdom, parts of Europe, and in the United States. And because of the way in which people are undertaking these acts of violence, you know, random acts perpetrated with everyday things like vehicles and knives, it's very unsettling. And it may be a statistically small, you may have a very statistically small chance of being attacked, but the fear is real. And I think that's part of why this has become such a focus of debate at the moment, particularly with young people. Some young people, I mean, there was a story just the other day about a young man intercepted at Sydney Airport on his way, allegedly, to fight with ISIS. So it's an issue that presents itself particularly with Islam. But you're absolutely right, I think, to remind us that it is something that is endemic to all religious traditions. How we go about tackling it, I think, there are two parts to my answer. The first is that, clearly, in terms of criminal law and security, intelligence services and police forces will do their level best to intercept people through the various means that they have and the various investigations they conduct to try to find people to stop them before they can do anything. That's the first part. But the second part, I think, is that what we need to do is actually to take religion seriously, because what people have tended to say, both on the left and on the right, is to say that if somebody is doing this in the name, they claim to be doing it in the name of Islam, this has nothing to do with Islam. We hear politicians say it, we hear journalists say it, they say this has nothing to do with Islam, Islam is a religion of peace. Well, it may well be, and then we need to have a conversation about it. In fact, Multicultural Minister Zed Seselia has just the other day said we need to have more honest conversations about Islam, about religion, and we need to talk about it. And one of my concerns, I think, is that in our society today, we tend to think that religion is something that, you know, it doesn't count for much. It should be left to the private sphere. What you do in the privacy of your own home and in your mind, that's another matter. And we don't take it seriously. And one of the things we don't take seriously is people saying that they are killing in the name of God. We go, well, no, they can't be killing in the name of God. But if they say they are, I think we have to take very seriously the claim that they are.
Well, of course.
And what we need to do is talk about religion.
Of course,
we talk about Islam.
We have to take it seriously because that is the reason that they're giving. You know, we have to accept and understand that that is has been for them the driving force. We've got a question from a listener here, Peter. Is one of the differences the difference between faith and violence as easy as a difference between Sunni and Shiite faiths?
Is it as easy as, did you say?
Yeah, is the difference between the faiths and violence as easy, I suppose, to categorise as a difference between the two main Islamic faiths, Sunni and Shiite? I'm not quite sure of the question, to be honest.
Well, I don't think it is quite as straightforward, because I think different religions, Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, have either they have often denounced violence in different ways, but people who claim to be followers of those religions have also perpetrated violence in different ways. When I say we need to talk about religion, what I think we have to do is say, well, if, let's take Islam, if people say Islam is a religion of peace and we accept that, then how do we explain verses in the Quran that say that command striking the necks of the unbeliever? What do verses like that mean? Let's have a conversation, not in a judgmental way, not to condemn, but help us to understand what those verses mean and why people who defend the existence of those verses are saying that people who use those verses as a pretext to kill are wrong. Let's have a conversation about that. Let's take that seriously and find out what it is that Islam actually does say. Whereas criticism or questioning of Islam often tends to be shut down these days with charges of Islamophobia, which I think is something we do need to resist.
I want you to hold that thought. We've just got a couple of messages, Peter. Then we'll be back. We're with Peter Curdy from the Centre for Independent Studies. We're speaking with Peter Curdy from the Centre for Independent Studies. A whole range of issues I want to touch on, Peter. We actually we were discussing in the break, and we actually got a message from a listener. They would like to know your view on, it's a little bit off topic, but your view on marriage equality.
Well, marriage equality, I think, is an issue, first and foremost, for the Parliament to decide, because mm-hmm. the nature of marriage is governed by legislation, and I think our elected representatives, if they are to change the meaning of marriage, it has to be done there. And it's one of the reasons why I'm personally not in favour of a plebiscite, because I think I don't think this sort of direct democracy works. We've got elected representatives; they go to election on a platform. They should legislate one way or the other. And I was disappointed that this failed. This earlier attempt failed. I think that marriage equality does turn essentially on the meaning of marriage.
Yeah.
And rather than on the status of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, the two do become very blurred. I am completely in support of the legalization, the normalization of relationships between same-sex couples. I think that is extremely important, and I think that the ideas like civil union are extremely important for offering not just a legal status, but stability as well. When it comes to extending the meaning of the term marriage, I have some questions. Not because I think that people are unworthy of marriage, but because marriage is, as I understand it, is about the union of a man and a woman. That's what it means. It means the union of a man and a woman. And that was clarified by the Australian Parliament in 2004, and when that went through under the Howard government, people like Penny Wong voted in favour of the change to the meaning of marriage. So that's become something that's enshrined in our law. Now, we can always change those ideas, and certainly we can change the meaning of a term, but I think it's quite deeply embedded in our society. And that if we are to extend the meaning of marriage by extending it to people who are not in relationships other than, you know, male and female, then I think we are going to change the structure of our society. We're going to change the way our understanding of family life, and we're going to change the way in which we think about the rearing of children. Now, I understand and fully accept, my wife and I have friends who are in this situation, that is already changing. The way we think about families is changing. The way we think about the raising of children is changing because of technology and IVF and so on and so forth. What I do think we need to do, if we are going to address this issue seriously, we have got to, our politicians, our elected representatives, have got to get to grips with this. I was disappointed that, I mean, given that we were going to have a plebiscite, even though I didn't particularly support one, given that we were going to have a plebiscite, I think we should have had that debate. I think Australians are very capable.
In fact, Peter, I don't think the agenda is, I don't think the plebiscite is actually off the agenda, because only this morning we spoke with the Victorian Minister for Equality, who again reminded us that $170 million is earmarked in the federal budget, the current federal budget, for the plebiscite. There isn't a plan to action that as yet, but, you know, in politics, as you know, a week is a long time, and anything can change. So who knows what the federal government is going to spring on us?
Well, thank you, Tass. You're ahead of me on that. So thank you for letting me know about that.
Sure. One of the other interesting ideas that's been floated about is that the feds are actually considering, the federal government, the federal Liberal government, is considering a postal vote plebiscite.
Oh, yeah, but if Australia Post did that, we'd all be still voting in 2021.
Jokes aside, though, the important issue about the postal vote is that apparently it doesn't require legislation.
No, it doesn't.
So at the stroke of a pen, Brandis and our Attorney General, Senator Brandis, and his crew can actually you know, initiate a postal vote and generate this debate again. Now, our community has very clearly said that we are very concerned about the impact that this debate will have on the mental health of its members. So, yes, let's have a debate. Let's keep it contained. Let's keep it managed. Let's keep it in Parliament rather than dragging this out into the living rooms of every member of our community.
And I think it's good to hear, you know, your views, Peter, on that. We could have an endless discussion about the definition of marriage and what it means. But I'm keen to get back to Islam. And you said that, you know, that we need to take religion seriously. Now, you know, when you look at some of the things and you know, of course, you have a much better knowledge of religion than I do because of your past works. But isn't one of the problems with, let's just say, Islamic terrorists or people, you know, that don't, you know, that have a particular view in the Jewish faith or the Christian faith, that, you know, they pick out bits of the scripture that suits their needs, and the parts that they don't like, of course, they discard them. So how do you take a religion seriously, or is it you separate that from a person's, what they take seriously? You're saying as a community we need to take it more seriously.
I think people, speaking for as a Christian, as an ordained member of the Anglican Church, I think I'm well aware of Christians certainly picking and choosing bits of scripture, and even within my own church, just going back to the issue of marriage equality and the recognition of same-sex relationships, Christians go both ways, and they will select. Those who are in favor will select verses, those who are opposed will select verses. And that sort of trading of verses, almost like hurling them like pieces of rubble across a barricade, I think gets us nowhere. Because you can always find something to support your point of view. And I think that can make discussion not only between religious and non-religious, but between religious people themselves, quite a difficult and protracted exercise. I think, though, that we do. This sounds rather theological, but in a way, what we have to do is to have an understanding of what it is that the scriptures
are about.
Yeah. What does they do? Say, take the Bible, the Old Testament, as Christians call it, and the New Testament. Is this the literal Word of God, or is it the spiritually informed understanding shaped by communities over, you know, thousands of years, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years?
And does it reflect the current values of our society?
I think that's a very good question, and that's one of the big tasks facing all theologians is to and ministers of religion is to interpret the scriptures to make them applicable and relevant to people living today. That's a very important part of what I think people in the churches have to be doing. Why is religion important? How do the scriptures relate to us? How do they help me to live my life on a day-to-day basis?
Well, Peter, we could talk a lot longer with you, and we've had some interesting feedback. I've been accused of being a right-wing fanatic and apologist, which particularly amuses me. But
could I just say one more thing
sure.
about the marriage equality? Because I think it's a very important one. My own view is that it's coming. It'll come to Australia, and I think Australia is ready for it. And most people in the community, I think in a generation, we've seen such an enormous switch. And what I would like to see now is that we get on with it, that our politicians they've gone to the country, they believe they've got support, is to do something about it. And then we can move past the point where we're discussing it endlessly.
I agree.
Thank you very much, Peter. That's a very refreshing view,
yes.
Actually. And coming from somebody like yourself, I think it's great to actually contribute to this discussion and the debate.
I want to thank you, Peter, for giving us the time. Good luck on Q&A. And
thank you.
Thanks again to the Centre for Independent Studies for making you available. Good luck.
Macker and Tass, I've really appreciated being on the program this morning. Thanks ever so much.
It's a pleasure. And you have, as I said, wear your armour on Monday night.
For listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.